You're listening to Dine to Learn More with Trevor and Laura. Dine to Learn More is where we talk about death and bereavement to deepen our understanding of this inevitable part of life.
Hi, Laura.
Hi, Trevor.
We're here again.
We are. So I've heard there's a, not heard, I know there's a new program that you developed here.
Yes.
Called The Nature of Mourning. And I thought it would be great for the listeners to hear about this program. Could you tell us a bit why you developed this program?
Yes, I'm really excited about this new program that we now offer to the clients here at the Peace Arch Hospice Society. What's really exciting about it for me is that I've always known, and all of us have always had a sense of the healing benefits of nature. We go for a walk out in the forest, we spend a bit of time, you know, on a bench under a tree, walking in a park. We just feel better after doing that. And I started being very attentive to any articles or research or references to what science has helped us to understand why we feel benefits from spending time in nature. And after a while, I realized, I think I gotta collect all this together into a document or a presentation. And when I did that, I realized that this is something that we can offer to our clients, because there are multiple benefits to spending time in nature that I'm excited to share with our listeners today.
Okay, yes, please do.
Okay, well, to start off with, there's this concept of nature deficit disorder. Now, we're not talking about a medical disorder. It's not something you diagnose. It's just an acknowledgement that we have a lack of access to nature in our current modern society. Okay. I think it underscores the fact that we evolved in nature. We developed as a species surrounded by nature, completely immersed in nature. But for the last century or two, we found that we're not spending as much time in nature. So all of those reasons and benefits that we got from being in nature are not part of our everyday experience anymore. And that's the deficit disorder that we're now struggling with. And we're starting to see that there's a lot of problems, perhaps, that have arisen because of that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, being outside, it's easy to go, oh, I don't want to walk, it's raining, or it feels cold, I'll just drive to the store. It's very easy in today's world to opt out of.
It's too easy, isn't it?
Simply being, or sitting outside even, but, oh, maybe it got noisy and I'd rather be quiet. Or
indeed. That's why in our program that we offer for our clients, we warn them ahead of time that even if it's raining, we're still going to go out. Now, if it's gale force winds, you know, and the rain is horizontal, of course, we're not going to push that. Even if it's raining a little bit, we're still going to go outside, because there's benefits then that come from being in rain that we can appreciate. So this program is divided into, right at this time anyways, it's divided into six different activities. And we'll how about we just kind of go through each one of those
activities? Yeah, because I think I'd like to ask, you know, for example, let's start with gardening.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people who garden can tell you why they like it, but I'd like to know the connection of gardening with bereavement and how this might help.
Sure. So what we found, well, not we, but the researchers who do this work found, is that 30 minutes of gardening can lead to greater reductions in cortisol levels. Cortisol is that chemical that causes us to feel stressed and anxious. It increases our heart rate and makes us feel tense. So 30 minutes of gardening can lead to greater reductions in the levels of that chemical compared to just 30 minutes of reading indoors or watching TV.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
Yeah.
So what do you think it is compared, like you said, if you were reading? So I love reading. I'm sitting, it's calming, it's relaxing. But this is actually now shown that gardening is more, is going to do a better job of actually bringing that down. So how does that fit?
Yeah, so what's happening there? When we put our hands in the dirt, basically dirt is good for you, right?
So our moms have been wrong our whole lives saying we gotta clean first.
Well, I mean, we gotta be careful about our exposure to bacteria and viruses, but I think we've become too careful of that in our modern society, to the point where we've been separating ourselves too much from the naturally occurring bacteria. Not all bacteria is bad for us. There's actually good bacteria, right? And we found that 2% of the population lives on farms today, compared to 90% of the population just 200 years ago. So only 2% of people live on farms, whereas 200 years ago, 90% of people lived on farms.
Wow.
So we're talking about what happens when you live on a farm. You're probably more exposed to those naturally occurring bacteria that's in dirt and all around us. So what we find out is that there's beneficial microbes in the soil that actually reduce stress hormones and strengthen our immune systems.
Oh, that is very interesting. Now I think next time I feel stressed, I just want to go stick my hands into some soil.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we asked our clients to do in the gardening activity in our nature-based grief support program. We encouraged them to do some gardening. We facilitated that for them. We brought in some plants and some soil. And my gosh, you would be surprised at how many bugs we brought into the building and snails and things that were attached to these plants. But it was fun because people got their hands in the dirt and enjoyed the experience. The psychological benefits of planting, we had them plant seeds too, which they took home and they'll water those seeds and see them sprout. And then they planted smaller plants here. The benefits of watching something grow that we ourselves put in the ground.
Yeah.
That's kind of almost like a fundamental experience of a hunter-gatherer, isn't it? I mean, the agrarian sort of inclination that humans have to plant seeds and watch them grow and then to harvest them for their own immediate sustenance and benefit. That's part of it. It's ingrained in us. So going down to the store and buying loaves of bread, that's how we do it today. But that's only been for the last, part of our existence as humans that we've done it that way.
Right. I know I personally, for food, I find it more satisfying if I think it tastes better. If I've made it all from scratch, or even one more up going, these are tomatoes from the garden. They taste so much better.
Isn't it fun to harvest your own vegetables? And
I wonder if that's what they did blind taste tests on, store bought and grown your own garden.
That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Okay, so another session that we have is walking in the forest.
Right. So what happens when we walk in a forest? I found this research that was conducted over 16 years. They gathered data that included 62 million people, at least 65 years of age, and they mapped the locations of where these people lived and noted who lived close to green spaces versus those who didn't, who lived in more of a concrete sort of urban area. And then they again, this was done over 16 years, so they were able to access medical data for these individuals, and they found that the people who lived in green spaces had a better, just a healthier lifestyle, a better outcome in terms of their well-being.
Wow.
Yeah, we're talking about lower rates of hospitalizations and it's really, really telling when we look at just the facts.
Wow, that is really interesting to have that study done. I mean, kudos, that is yeah. very interesting figures to
come right, out. Right. So then it would beg the question, okay, well, what is it about these green spaces
right.
that's so healthy for people? What's going on? I mean, we could say, well, we feel calm and relaxed and everything, and yeah, that's all part of it, the emotional, psychological effect of it. But what we found is that there's antimicrobial organic compounds called phytoncides. Okay.
Okay.
Big mouthful there. But it turns out that these are chemicals that plants, trees, and grasses emit into the environment. And when we spend time in the environment, we absorb them through our skin and through our respiratory system. And the exposure to these phytoncides can lower blood pressure, heart rate, and again, cortisol levels or adrenaline levels. They improve our immune system. And they do this by the fact that these chemicals that occur in plants are actually the plant's immune system. It's the way plants stay healthy. So if we incorporate those into our own biological system, our own bodies, it helps us to also fight off diseases.
Wow.
And, yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm going to have to take this information home because to show my daughters, because they've known every time we've ever gone into a forest, I keep saying, breathe deep as you can, take in all this air, because to me it always smells so good.
Yes.
And there's something, so now I see the science behind of why I like it.
Right.
But it's true, there is something about that forest smell.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, I don't know if this is something you're doing, but a lot of people talk about like grounding, where you walk barefooted
mm-hmm. yeah
and like yeah. feel, and I don't know if that's still the dirt or if it's just the same
mm-hmm.
connection even more so.
Yes, there's this theory that there's electromagnetic activity, the different energies and whatnot that might be available through the ground, through trees,
mm-hmm.
and when we connect with it, we can benefit from that connection. One of the activities that we do with our clients is a mindfulness forest walk,
okay.
right? So not only are we taking in the phytoncides when we walk through a forest, but we do it with as an intentful, purposeful activity. So we stop and we listen to the sounds in the forest.
Right.
We breathe in deeply, so we breathe in the smells of the forest around us. We pause to really use our five senses to connect with the natural environment,
right.
so that we avail ourselves of all the benefits that we get from
yeah.
being in the forest.
Okay. So another session, which I would love to also go one time, I've heard is equine-assisted wellness.
Mm-hmm. I'm really excited about this opportunity to introduce this to our clients, because what we found is that, Some people might have had exposure to horses
mm-hmm.
Or other farm animals, and some might not have. So whenever I talk to people who have been around horses and farm animals, they always say that, you know what, there's just something that happens, right? There's just some benefit that we get from that. And I don't know, what's going on with that? Why is that? Well, I guess we could look back throughout human history and see that we've spent a lot of time with horses. Horses have been a big part of human evolution. And so it makes sense that in a way, co-evolving with these different domesticated species, we've kind of formed an affiliation with them. What happens is that horses, for example, are what we call a herd animal.
Mm-hmm.
They congregate in herds like deer and other animal species. In fact, humans are actually a herd
right.
animal. If you look, at nature programs of other primates like gorillas or chimpanzees, they're always together in groups. And humans are very closely related to those primates. So what we find is that herd animals tend to kind of synchronize their awareness or their senses. They tend to align themselves with one another.
Right.
Right. So if you have one, let's say you have a horse or a deer out in a field with other horses and deer, and there's some danger or something that happens, there's a threat that comes into that space. If one deer recognizes that, they will, through this sort of shared communication that they mm-hmm. have with the other deer in the herd, they will alert them to that. It's there's still a lot of unknowns about what's really going on with that, but there is some sort of a connection that these animals share. So when we're in this sharing space with, let's say, a horse, perhaps we too are sharing some sort of a connection with that animal in such a way that the horse can maybe sense what we're thinking or feeling in a way, not that they understand it the way we might think that we would understand one another, but that they are somehow aligned with us. And that's where they find that equine therapy has been used to treat anxiety and ADHD, eating disorders and addiction and depression and other mental health conditions to great, great benefit.
I mean, I grew up riding horses, so I had this benefit when I was younger of being around them and riding and just, you know, helping take care of them. And there is something about their being, and they're also very, very large. So it feels a bit, it's an interesting connection with them because I think we naturally tend to maybe be fearful of large things, mm-hmm. right? Like, oh, that's a really big animal. I ride the gorilla. I'm not going to get too close. But with horses, like you said, there's a different connection, and there's a we've all learned to live around each other, so mm-hmm. it's not a danger to each other. They're not actually going to purposely hurt us, you know.
Right.
So, and they're just, there's something about them that is, they're very intelligent too.
Yes, I think we don't give horses enough credit for the type of intelligence that they have. The studies have shown that there's a mirroring process that is thought to help clients identify what they're feeling and potentially to modify their emotions for the better. And this happens with horses. It can happen in a very gentle, sort of self-paced, non-judgmental manner.
Right, okay. So then another session that you go on would be bird watching.
Right. It's incredible. I mean, you know, some people have done some bird watching and others have done it without realizing that they were, know, like, hey, look at that bird over there, or listen to that bird. Right, so I mean, we find that bird song has been shown to elicit positive biological responses in people, such as reducing stress and promoting relaxation. And again, it lowers the cortisol levels or adrenaline levels in our bodies and increases serotonin production. Right, serotonin being one of the comforting, beneficial chemicals in our system.
So this is why some people have those sound machines of birds to like, or for babies, or even just for themselves. It's actually because this is how it's supposed to be.
Yeah. And again, what is behind that? What's happening? Well, the theory says that birds help us to create a deeper connection with the natural world, which is another way of saying that bird song aligns us with the biophilia hypothesis that believes that humans have an innate connection to nature and that being in natural environments can have healthy effects. So the biophilia hypothesis is this concept that, you know what, let's be honest, we evolved in nature. We're part of the natural world. And again, as we alluded to earlier, we've separated ourselves in our modern world in so many ways from being part of the natural world, and yet we still are part of it. So we have a need. It's not just it'd be nice to do that. It's actually a need that we have to be part, to experience that natural world. So I guess what I'm kind of suggesting is it's not an option, right? It's we need it for our own well-being.
Yeah, and well, like you said, that on a mindfulness forest walk, you're going with the intent to breathe, to listen, maybe even feel a tree, feel, you know, it's, so bird watching is coming in at that same space. We're here to listen.
Yeah.
But you had actually a ornithologist come and kind of give a little lesson, maybe, I don't know, or just a little more awareness of what you're listening to.
Sure, yeah, I mean, that's not needed for anybody who wants to go out and enjoy birding. But, you know, you take along one of those apps like Merlin that you can record the sound of the birds, and then the app will tell you what type of bird it is. It'll give you information about that bird. And if you happen to have an ornithologist that you can accompany you on a birding adventure out there, even better, because by having an ornithologist join us in that activity, they bring in the knowledge of these types of birds that we are listening to and looking at. And by learning more about their migratory patterns, their nesting habits, how they interact with their environment, there's something that's really fun about that, right? Because you learn that you know, they're part of this world, and they're a necessary part of it. And then we realize that we are aligned with them in being an essential part of the world too.
Yeah, and when you think of every living being on this world, I mean, birds, they sound so beautiful. They, none of them have as beautiful as the sound. It's quite interesting that they were the ones who came to give us music, essentially, right? That's how people probably started music, is because they heard birds and they thought, hey, how do I make that sound?
Yes, right. Yeah.
You know, they're the actual
progenitors of modern music. Well, that's a good point. And as I'm sitting here, we're having this discussion, I can hear the ticking of a clock. I can hear the rumbling of an air conditioning unit in the building, which is kind of, you know, these are artificial sounds,
right?
And we do have a lot of artificial sounds in our environments today. So by going out in nature and listening to birds, listening to the breeze rustling the branches and leaves, by listening to the wind, by listening to the waves lapping on a shore, or the trickling water in a creek, you know, these natural sounds in nature, they don't follow a regimented mechanical pattern.
Right?
They're kind of random.
Yes, that's true. Like even music, we make it to have this very set, perfect balance, everything in a synchronized way, whereas in nature, it's not. And we walk our dogs first thing in the morning, and my goodness, I tell you, at 5 a.m., every bird is up and out, and it is a chorus of all sorts of, and it's just wonderful to hear. But over the winter, you never heard them.
Yes.
And so once spring starts, they all start, and then, and we always wonder what they're saying to each other. Like, is everybody still there?
That's why you want an ornithologist.
That's true.
Along with you.
Yeah.
So this randomness of the patterns of nature, we're talking about birds singing, the sounds that we hear in a forest, but we're also talking about the leaves, like looking at leaves in a tree, looking at the way grass grows in a field. And it's soothing for our brains to just kind of, because if we're sitting in a room, we're looking at everything is kind of like a square-edged pattern or flat. There's, you know, the walls, unless we have a painting on the wall or a picture or something, it's pretty plain. And we live in these environments that are very predictable for our brains. And so our brains kind of, but cognitively our brains kind of are diminished in what they're engaging in. You know, they kind of go to sleep in a sense. But when you're out in nature, our senses are taking in all this random sensory data that is soothing, right? Because it lets our eyes and our ears and our nose just kind of wander through the vast variety of the sensory world and really appreciate it and really ground ourselves in the present moment of being in that space.
Well, and the neural pathways, the neurons keep firing every time, and you're learning, you're keeping those capacities open. Because I know someone I knew, their child's eyesight was diminishing, especially during COVID, like at a very fast rate. And the optometrist said, you need to get them outside. They're spending so much time inside, whether it was reading or watching TV on a screen or just inside, that they were losing the ability to, when you're outside, you look up close, you look far away, your peripheral, everything is being engaged at such a higher level than when you're staying inside. So when you said that people in green space, all these different, you know, health things were so much lower, I mean, just that there is just your eyesight.
Right, it's so true.
If you just take one piece of it, your eyesight, just for looking, you know?
That's
interesting.
Now, I just realized that this has been a long long answer to the question that you asked at the very beginning about what does this nature-based stuff have to do with grief and bereavement, okay? So everything that I've just talked about here, I think, is an answer to that, right? And we can kind of summarize this all by saying that the more we align ourselves and connect ourselves with the natural world, the more we align ourselves with the realities of who we are and how we are integrated and part of that natural world. And we do observe and know that death is part of the natural cycle of life that we see in this natural world. And by aligning ourselves with that world, I think we can have an enhanced acceptance and understanding of the role that death has. And thereby, it helps us in our grief experience so that we're not just intellectually trying to wrestle with the why of it and feeling overwhelmed by the pain and the suffering of it, but we can see that, you know, this is part of something much bigger, right? This is part of how nature works, and I am part of it. The person that I loved who died was part of it, and we don't have to intellectually understand it to accept it and to allow ourselves to be part of it, right?
Yeah, and what you just said reminded me of a line from a song I've always loved, and it says something like, "The wind and trees still know your name." So, you know, sometimes when you lose someone and people stop speaking about them less and less because their presence is not here, it's just naturally how it happens. But that has always given me such a good feeling to know that, you know, it's still remembered. Like, the earth still remembers, the land, every nature, it's all part of it.
I love that metaphor, and I think it's more than just a metaphor. I think it is reality too.
Now, we still had one more session, I think, we hadn't touched on, and I think it was yoga.
Yoga.
And you had spoken about, you know, being in the grass and being and listening, so I'm guessing that's where yoga comes in.
Yeah, and that's the, I mean, we do have a yoga group here that we do indoors, but of course part of this nature-based program, which we call the Nature of Morning, we want to take yoga outside, out into a park setting. Again, we're aligning ourselves with all of the sensory experience of being in close to nature. And what better way to do that but through a yoga session? So you mentioned earlier about barefoot in you know, our feet connecting with the earth, and certainly our participants will be encouraged to do barefoot yoga in the grass.
And hopefully on that day feel sunshine on their face, feel that warmth on their skin, hear the bees buzzing.
That's right.
All those things, and the welcome breeze when you're feeling a little. Well, this program sounds wonderful. Is there anything else you want to touch on about why you developed this? I mean, you've really given us all so much to think about, and for me, there was a lot of wow factors of, oh, I didn't know that. And so it's nice to be able to know these things, and gives you it connects, oh, I feel this way when I'm here, and now I have the words and the why of why. It feels so good to go for a walk in forest.
Exactly. I just wanted to give the participants opportunity to connect with nature. I think that we kind of have the opposite happening in our culture. We have so many barriers to that, you know, and most of them are learned barriers, conditioning. A lot of people just, I don't know, they just don't avail themselves of the opportunities to get out there and connect with nature. And it doesn't have to be a grand thing like going kayaking or hiking in the to the top of a mountain, you know. It could just be going for a walk in the green space that's located two blocks from where you live.
Right.
It could be something as simple as that. Again, research shows that 30 minutes spent in a green space does reduce cortisol levels and increase our immune systems.
Wow. And for all of us in our South Surrey White Rock community, we are lucky beyond measure to live in a space where we have so many green spaces and paths. The ocean is there. If you would, if you're an ocean person, you'd rather put your feet in the sand and smell the salt. And
that's right.
So to all of us, people in the community, take advantage of where we live. It is gorgeous here, and not everybody gets the same level of a gift like this.
Well, I'm getting a sense that the people who have listened to this podcast today are probably itching to get out there and enjoy some of this natural world that we're surrounded by.
That's true. So we should let you all go so you can go for a quick little walk. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Trevor, for sharing all this. I've learned a lot, and I think others will have too.
Great. Wonderful. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for being open to learning more about death and grief. Stay tuned for more episodes by following us on Instagram or Facebook.